coming to you from sunny Los Angeles, California. This is 30 Minute Mentors. Leaders to listen to with Adam Mendler. Here is your host, Adam Mendler.
I'm excited to have the CEO of one of the most successful and prominent companies in the history of the American fitness industry on the show this week. The company actually predates the modern fitness industry. Adam Zaitzeff is the president and CEO of Gold's Gym. Gold's Gym was founded down the street in Venice Beach in 1965 and put on the map in the 1970s by its most famous member, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold actually still works out at the same Gold's Gym in Venice today. There are currently over 700 Gold's Gyms across 29 states and 29 countries, and over 300 million members worldwide. I wish my businesses had 3 million members or 300 million members. I would take either one of those numbers. One of those members, by the way, is this week's guest, Gold's Gym CEO, Adam Zaitzeff. Adam, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
First question for you. Did you need to pass a one rep max test to become the CEO of Gold's?
No, thankfully, I did not. Although I spent quite a bit of time in the gym, but that was not one of the tests, and I'm certainly glad.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that. So I'm personally often asked, you know, what is it that you do on a daily basis? And as an entrepreneur, it's a really challenging question to answer. What is it that you do on a daily basis, and what are the most interesting aspects of your job?
You know, and that's a good one. I think you're right. As an entrepreneur and as an executive in a business, I think the most interesting aspects of what I do every day is that every day is different. And for me and my personality as a former serial entrepreneur and now an executive and an operator, I love the fact that things are different. So for me, every day starts out pretty similar with my own personal routine, and then, but really when you get to work, it's really, everything is different. And my kids, when I were much younger, always asked me, hey, when you're the boss, what do you do all day? Like, what do you do? And I said to them, and I don't think they got it when they were younger, they get it now, but I said, my job is to solve problems for people on my team so they can keep doing their job, right? Help them solve problems, work with them on a daily basis so we can get over the humps that we have in the business in various areas and keep growing and executing it and growing the business. And that's my job, is to help them solve problems. So jumping from one meeting to another. And obviously, you know, we are, as you mentioned, we're the legacy brand in fitness, but we're not just a fitness company. We are a gym operator. We are a franchisor. And because we have that legacy brand, we are a licensor. So we license our brand in many places. So for me, I jump from meeting to meeting and helping solve problems with my team and growing our business in those three areas. And so it's cool because it's diversified and makes it exciting. And it certainly keeps my entrepreneurial mind and hunger going on a daily basis.
Could you talk a little bit more about your daily routine? Do you get up at a certain time? You mentioned that you hit the gym, which makes sense. Could you talk a little bit more about what you do day in and day out, just on a personal level?
Yeah. So for me, much to my wife's chagrin, I get up at 4:40 every morning.
Wow.
And it's not because I'm one of those guys who, you read a lot about some of these CEOs, oh, I'm up at 3, I'm doing this. It's not because of that. It's because if I don't work out in the morning, I won't get my workout. And it's a long day, and I like to eat, and just like everybody else. And so if I don't work out, I'll pay for it. So for me, I get up at 4:40, usually let the dog out, try to be quiet. I have a newborn at home as well as teenagers. And so, and then I'm out the door by 5. And then I get to the gym either for a class or do my own workout, or I've been running more. So I'll get out and do a run. And then usually done, showered, and at my desk a little after 7-ish on a daily basis. So from a morning routine, that's kind of the morning routine. Then you get the work routine. And then by the time I probably don't leave the office till about 6:30. It's a long day, but it then takes about a half hour to get home. And the first thing you do is grab the infant from the wife before she strangles
me,
and then spend some time. But if I don't get up that early, and it's just habit, even on the weekends, I probably don't get up quite that early, but my body will wake up and then I'll doze off and get up a little later and work out. But it's just one of those things that kind of stuck.
Yeah, no, that's impressive. Something that I hear pretty consistently from CEOs and other leaders who have made it to the top like you, having a routine that starts early and is managed consistently. So you became the CEO of Gold's Gym about a year ago. How did you get here? How did you get to where you are today? Can you start by sharing some of your most formative experiences from your early days as a kid, maybe all the way through your time as a student in college?
Yeah, for me, it's interesting. You know, you're an entrepreneur, successful, got a couple different businesses, you're growing. And I started out as an entrepreneur, but I really, what got me there was, especially as a kid, was kind of my grandfather. You know, he was in multiple wars, World War II and other wars after that, and came back and had a business that he had started before he went to war, came back, continued to operate his business, one of the largest manufacturers of custom lighting in the country. He was located in Massachusetts. And I grew up with him as an idol and someone who gave me the experience of seeing somebody who started their own business, you know, from the ground up, who grew it, who had people who relied on him every day for their income and put food on the table and to pay for their kids' colleges, and who respected him. And it really stuck to, with me. I would spend a lot of time in his shop and meet the people and just saw how they admired him and respected him, but also cared about him, right? And I always wanted to have an experience like that, whether I was the owner of the business, running the business. I wanted to have people who relied on what we did and the decisions we made in our business in order for their own personal income and success and just livelihood. And that really stuck with me. I always wanted to do that. It was the reason why after school, when I got my first job, within a few months, I left, started my first business, and went through about a 12 or 13 year period of just serial entrepreneurship because of him. And it really drove me to do that.
What do you do right after college? Can you talk about your first job and did it make a difference in your career trajectory or not really?
And it's funny you say that because to me, the first job after college, people always say that'll make you, that'll get you going, that'll get you in the right path. Actually, for me, it was my first job in college. I had just about done with my freshman year, met a gentleman who was going to my college. He was going part-time, a little older than me. We had the same class together and he was working. And back then, I'm in my mid 40s. So this is back when computers and networks and local area networks and technology was still very new and expensive. And he was working in sales at a small local computer systems integrator. And they needed some help building computers because back then you had to build them. And as a small company, you built them, they were clones and you built the motherboard. And so I went down there for an interview and hired me on the spot. I started working the next day. My first job was doing with them was helping with an audit they were doing at a company with some of their older technology. Next thing you know, that I'm building computers and helping them build things. And I learned how to build them from the ground up, brand new ones. And the next thing you know, I'm selling. And it was a small company, about 15 people, two owners, two partners. And as much as my grandfather taught me that I wanted to run a business, be an entrepreneur, they taught me what it's like. These guys live and breathe it. I ended up working there way more hours than my mother knew about in college, made a really good living as a kid in college, and I worked there right through the end of college before I moved away to New York. And that was probably the thing that taught me how to run a business from all aspects. You know, what's a purchase order? How do we do these things? How do we manage cash flow as a small business? How do we take care of our employees? So the two founders of that company took me under their wing and taught me a lot. And that was probably certainly made the difference in my career trajectory in terms of that aspect.
Well, you kind of alluded to the theme of the show, 30-Minute Mentors. And talked a little bit about some mentors who are important to you. Can you talk a little bit about mentorship and the role it's played in your career and how you try to act as a mentor today as the CEO of a really prominent company?
Yeah, I've always had people who've just looked out for me in one way, shape, or form, even if it was just indirectly giving me advice. I mean, the gentlemen who started that company were always there for me. We stayed in touch for years afterwards. You know, super helpful. When I got out of college, moved to New York, got my first job there for 6 months before I even then left and started my first business. The gentleman who ran that company, who hired me, Paul, we still stayed in touch for years afterwards, gave me some good advice. And so I think it's really important that people who you try to emulate and look at, especially as an entrepreneur, which is not an easy thing, they were super helpful in that area. And it's actually, it's moved into the role today. And we have this program at Gold's Gym we called our Lift training program. And it's funny you mentioned it because I literally, before this, two meetings before this one, it's our leadership program and you go through a program for 3 months and you mentor people. So I mentor one of the participants and these participants, you know, have to apply for the program. They have to be approved by different levels of management and we're there to, you know, kind of help them grow in their roles. And they go through some education programs here and training. And then they also go off to a Harvard or a Stanford or one a prominent university for a couple of those quick courses that they offer, and we send them up there. And I take a lot of what I learned from the folks that taught me and mentored me and apply it to that program. And it's really helped these people. And it's something that we try to do here at Golds and help provide this mentor-mentee relationship. And it lasts way past the program, which is about 3 months. You know, the person I mentored in the last program in the spring when I got back and the one this summer, we talk regularly and I still try to help them as much as I can. So it's really important both historically, but also to get these leaders of the future in our company to grow.
That's awesome. What are the most important skills that you think people should develop early on in their careers? And what advice do you have on how they can develop them?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think a variety of things are important. I think I wish someone taught me this when I was obviously younger, but I think for me, it was the first thing is, you know, don't be afraid and to fail at something you're doing. And it is a skill. You know, I think it really is. And I think people don't realize that you have to fail to learn. And it's a skill in order to bounce back from that, right? And we you know, unfortunately, in this day and age where everyone gets a trophy and everyone wins, that doesn't work in the world of business. And to be able to gracefully take a failure and to learn from it and to build on it for the future and to look back on it a year or two later and go, I made that mistake. I'm going to apply that lesson here, even in the most simplest way. I think that's really, you know, really important. And I try to teach our people here that when I talk to them, I say, we only succeed if we fail first. As silly as it sounds, I'm not trying to, you know, be some philosophical leader here, but it makes sense. You've got to fail in order to get to the right solution. And some people don't handle it well. And I think for me, if I had learned that a little bit earlier in life, probably would have even helped in some other situations halfway through my career. But I think it's certainly important. And people need to understand that you only grow if you fail and only learn from those failures.
It sounds like you weren't as fortunate as I was, because I was the captain of the worst baseball team in the history of baseball.
Oh boy.
And probably in the history of high school. So my baseball team, actually, my senior year of high school, we literally lost every single game that we played. And I was the king of failure. So talk about learning the hard way. I learned the hard way. And
indeed.
I got that experience. And I think you were probably better off not having had that experience yourself.
Well, certainly, I'm sure it was a tough lesson at the time, but I'm sure you, at least you can look back on it now and laugh, that's for sure.
I learned that I wasn't going to be playing in the show. Taught me that pretty quickly. But I still love watching it.
Absolutely.
What would you say was the greatest failure in your career? And what did you learn from it?
You know, I think it's hard because I still make small mistakes every day, every week. We all make mistakes and do little things and learn from them. And it is certainly hard to pinpoint one of those. I think in one of my earlier entrepreneurial startup days, I think probably in one of the businesses we had, I think I always looked at that business. And as an entrepreneur, as you know, you try to look to the future and always see the success. You see the startup actually executing and you see the product and market and people buying it and customers happy. And that's what drives you to get from nothing to that vision, right? And you look at that. And I think early on, I had too much of that gleam in my eye in one particular startup that we had. And I didn't think enough about what could happen and what could happen if this didn't work. And in my mind, it was already working, which sometimes as an entrepreneur, that's a good thing. But sometimes it makes you not think of the failures. And in that particular business, I was already way ahead in my head. Everything was going great in my mind. In reality, it was not that it wasn't going great. It never even got there. And so for me, I look back at that. When I think about that startup often, and I try to apply those lessons to business, because you've always got to have a plan B, C, D, and E. And that's a big lesson I took from that.
Can you maybe dig a little bit deeper and talk about how you bounce back? Because it's very easy for those of us looking on the outside. We see the CEO of a highly successful company, and we see someone who is clearly at the top of his game. But what we don't see is the journey, and what we don't see are the ups and downs. And, you know, Everyone has struggles, big and small. And, you know, one of the things that I think would be really inspiring to listeners would be to understand how you really came back from deep setback. It could be personal, it could be professional, but just the process of bouncing back and how you did it.
Yeah, and as you know, as an entrepreneur, there's not always there's not the 8 stages of dealing with that, right? Like there is with other things in life. And I think for me, the first part was just actually coming to grips with the fact that it wasn't going to work, and that's hard. because you always want to see, well, there's always a bright side, you know, like in the movie that somebody always finds a way to save the day. Well, that doesn't always happen in business. And at the end of the day, you can't wait for the hero to come in. At some point, you just got to kind of call it a day and say, you know what? It's not going to work. And I think that was the first piece of it. And then for me, the second piece was really, I had a good support system around me, whether it was both professional and personal, and just diving back in. What's the next project, whether it's a new job because you weren't good in the other one, whether it's a new business because this one didn't go well. For me, it was just diving right back in, taking what I had learned, probably with eyes wide open a little more, after that one, and just diving back in again. And in that particular case, I was able to do that pretty quickly, dive back into an exciting young company that I was part of, as an investor, and then came on to as the operator. And it helped, allowed me to apply those lessons I learned, and then just keep going. And sometimes the best way to do it is just take your lickings and dive right back in.
Very, very well said. What are your thoughts on how to build a winning organizational culture?
That's interesting. The people who figure that out in our worlds do really well, right? Not just executives, sure. People who deal with culture every day, and chief people officers who are dealing with culture. And I think the biggest thing for me that I look at here at Golds is, number one, I'm super transparent, probably a little too much. Sometimes my head of HR will kick me under the table, but I'm pretty transparent. And I want people to know that here, we're all in this together. We're not trying to hide anything. And I think your culture and your people respect that, and the culture builds because they feel that you consider them part of your circle of trust and your environment, and you're not just sitting back with the executive team and coming out and they're hearing what to do, right? They're part of the decisions. They're part of those things. So transparency certainly helps. And I think for me, it's also making sure people know that I'm just like them. I get up out of bed, throw a couple feet on the floor, get going every day just like them. Just because we happen to wear certain titles in the company doesn't mean that we are just regular human beings like them. And I think that I find that to be a very important part of building this culture here, and making sure, like, I walk around two, maybe three times a day, I say hi to people, give the knuckle punches, see what's going on, walk by the payroll team, talk to the ladies, whatever's there, just to chit chat, to know that you're not just sitting in the office or in meetings all day. You're just like them, you're part of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's super important.
That's great. To that end, I mean, in your view, what do you believe are the key characteristics to a great leader?
I think for me, it's involving your team in a lot of the decision making. At the end of the day, you are the boss, whatever role you're in. If you run the team, big or small, you are the boss, and maybe you have the ultimate decision making. But I think the best leaders are the ones who involve their team in the decisions, who get most of them. You're never all going to agree, but get most of them on board, because usually those who don't agree will see that the team is on board and they'll jump in. And I think it's the team. If you lead a team and they're all on board and they feel invested in the decision and they're part of the decision and they're part of the projects and the plan or the company's vision, I think that's the best way to get people to, not only be proud of what they're doing, but also just be really fully engaged in whatever project or whatever plan or whatever project your company's working on, and really be part of a culture that works, right? And if you just you're not listening, you're if you're not transparent and you're more making decisions, whether it's in a bubble or not, even if you're listening to them and they don't feel like they're involved, I think it's detrimental for us.
Experience Adam's insights and inspirational message by booking Adam to appear at your company, on your campus, or at your next event. Adam's keynotes and workshops on leading in today's landscape, becoming your best self, and lessons learned from America's top leaders leave audiences inspired and better equipped to excel personally and professionally. Visit adammindler.com to learn more and to bring Adam to your organization.
Who are some of the greatest leaders you've been around in your career, or who you've maybe even admired from afar? And what is it about those leaders that you've learned from them and that you admire?
Yeah, there's a couple of folks. I mean, from someone I wish I'd met, but I haven't, but I admire from afar. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. I admire his, I'm going to do this. This is my vision. I'm going to do it my way. And my team, and the team gets on board with that. And he creates some things that no one else can create, because he's not going to be swayed by what everyone else thinks, right? And I certainly admire that tenacity and that diversification. So it's always someone who I enjoyed tracking, following, reading about the things he says, sometimes certainly controversial, but listen, he's doing things that no one else has done. And I really admire that. And And then for me, you know, I've also had some good people that leaders that I've worked side by side with. You know, I had the pleasure of working for about 6 years at Constellation Software, which is a big publicly traded software holding company in Toronto. They acquired my company from my partners and I, and I went to work for that group. And I worked alongside some amazing folks who understand business, who understand culture, who understand how to build value in companies and treat people well, which they really did. And you know, the CEO of that parent company, as well as the CEO of the Jonas division where I worked, were two people that I still keep in touch with and admire just because of their longevity and their ability to build something from literally an idea, an investment in three people, and turn it into one of the most darling stocks on that exchange and a great company.
Sure. What can anyone do to become a better leader tomorrow?
I think really just listen to what your people are saying, and they're looking to you. Whenever they speak and they give you an idea, they are looking to you. They're looking at your reactions, and they're looking at how you're going to answer that, and how you're going to comment, and how you're going to contribute. So I think listening, number one, and then I think just be genuine. In this day and age, people can see through anything, right? They can really see through it. Sure. And if you're not genuine, they know it right away. They'll go home and talk about it to their spouse and say, you know, I said this and I could tell he said great idea, but I could tell he didn't mean it. And I think that people really need that. And there's too much opportunity in this world for people to go. There's so many great companies, so many places they could work. Competition for our team has never been greater, especially in our markets. And if you're genuine and you care and you listen, then I think you have a shot at being a really good leader.
What do you look for in the people that you hire?
I think more so lately, I think I look for personality. I look for people who can fit into this environment. Obviously they've got to have some level of domain expertise in what you're hiring. But I think more importantly, I think a lot of that you can teach if they've got some of it, but somebody else has a little bit more than them, but they have the personality and they can fit in and they can engage in the culture and they can be part of the organization and they believe in the mission and vision, not just for the paycheck. I think that to me is the most important thing, because those are the people that will stick through it with you through thick and thin.
What do you think are some of the things that companies overvalue and undervalue when it comes to hiring?
Yeah, I think this might be a controversial subject, but I think they overvalue how many degrees you have and how many letters are after your name. And I think they undervalue real world experience and undervalue just being able to look and say, this person, what have they been through? Not only the career they've had and people they work for, but what do they go through there? You know, somebody who worked at a company who was good at what they do, but that company was going through a turnaround and that person stayed there and helped them through it and was part of it. The lessons that person has learned is so much more valuable than someone who's just been in a similar role. So I think they certainly, you know, try to overvalue sometimes the degrees and undervalue really with the real world experience they have.
Sure. No, I actually agree with that completely. I think that's extremely well said.
Thank you.
You obviously have a ton going on in your day and in your week and just on your plate. How do you most effectively manage your time and manage all of your competing priorities?
Yeah, well, as a former CIO and technology guy, still at heart, I certainly need that technology piece. And if it didn't happen if it wasn't in my Outlook, right? So I'm always tracking my calendar. I'm a huge Evernote user, and I'm always tracking my notes in there. So I really keep a history of what we talked about, what's important for me. So between those aspects are certainly important, and I live and breathe by those every day. And I think also for priority, I think it's just a matter of, unfortunately, as you know, when you're running businesses, sometimes it's whichever fire is the hottest, and which you can't argue with, and sometimes you have to go address those. But I think for me, when I came back here, we built. As a team, we decided what our kind of core pillars were going to be for the evolution of this brand. And I look at those pillars, and what I did, Adam, was I printed them out on a nice piece of paper. I had my graphics guys make them look all pretty with some logos, and I put them on every manager's desk. And I said, this is our pillars. I want you to look at them every morning when you come in. And if you're working on something, and this is what I do for myself, that is not on this list, meaning it's not helping one of the things on this list, as minute as it may be, then you're not focused and you're not prioritizing on the right thing. And that's kind of how I focus every day, is obviously dealing with urgent issues. But if I'm not focused on something that ties to those pillars, then I'm not in the right direction.
I love that. That's great. That's great, tangible advice that I think I can apply and become a better leader by following. Can you talk a little bit more about Gold's brand strategy? How are you capitalizing on your historic brand? I'm actually curious. You know, this is a marketplace that seems to reward companies that are trendy and fresh, you know, and Gold's doesn't necessarily seem to fit into either of those categories, but it does have this incredible history to it. How do you square that circle? And can you talk about just sort of the thought process behind it and what's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You come and you work for such a brand that is iconic like us. And I always tell people, I mean, I go to countries on business and I see people wearing our t-shirts and we don't even have gyms there. Or when you look at movies and there's a, you know, they talk about a gym membership, half the time it's about goals or it's just a brand that people recognize, you know, and it's good and bad, right? Because you do have that recognition. But to your point, you also, it's historic and is it trendy and fresh? And there's a lot of things out there. Fitness is a cool industry. There's always new concepts. There's always new segments. There's technology disruption. There's a ton of things happening here. And our strategy really is, you know, we're getting back to what we're good at. And we're good at a couple things, many things, but with the core things we're known for, we're good at making people strong, you know. And strong back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s used to be because you want to be strong for bodybuilding or whatever reason. And that's, you know, and plenty of people who want to be bodybuilders work out at our gyms and other gyms alike. But now it's about being strong for life, right? And that's kind of where we're focusing, whether you're a dad who wants to be strong so you can hang out with your kids and play and not pass out in the backyard, or you want to go grab the groceries and hold a kid in one hand and bring him inside, whatever it is, you want to be a stronger grandmother, whatever it is, Gold's Gym is focusing on making people strong for life and helping them get success. And so we've kind of refocused our brand strategy on that. It's what we're known for. It's what we're good at. And we're really good at getting people results. And at the same time, we were known for being, you know, helping create this segment. Like you said in the opening, we were known for helping create this segment, and we need to get back to that. And that means really focusing on becoming the best franchisor of full service, full amenity fitness out there. And we've been known for that for years, and we kind of shied away from that for a little while. And we're really refocusing on that global franchising and building our brand that way.
Can you kind of talk a little bit more broadly about some of the key marketing and branding lessons that listeners can take away from what you're doing? What are some things that you think the audience would find valuable that they might be able to apply to their businesses?
I think one of the things for us is if you have, you know, we for a while we kind of shied away from, you know, what our brand was known for and what we were good at. Even our brand itself and it kind of made it wasn't as prominent with it. And I think we realized that we needed to refocus back on that. And yes, here's the brand, but the brand has evolved. And, you know, kind of like the old saying, it's not your father's Oldsmobile, right? I mean, we're not your father's Gold's Gym anymore. And, you know, we're probably some of the few gyms in the world that can say that probably had multiple generations working out in it. And so we don't want to shy away from that, number one. And I also think that from a brand strategy, it is focusing on results and tying it back to our brand. So whatever your brand is known for, focus on those results. And, you know, we do a challenge every year. It's a global thing. And we get a ton of positive feedback and response and recognition and lead flow from focusing on the results of what we did in the challenge. And people came in severely overweight and in terms of not deconditioned, and helping them just get back in shape for life, not to be a, you know, bodybuilder or a fitness model, just to get back in shape for life. And that's what we focus on. And those results resonate when we talk about that with our brand. And I think showing the results, not your product, but the results that your product can give is something we've learned a good lesson on.
What are the most important things that you've personally learned about health and fitness since joining Gold's?
Learn number one, as you get older, the food doesn't burn off faster. Number one, so you gotta pay attention to that.
That at age 31.
Yeah, you know, I'm learning it. That's why that 4:40 wake up call happens. But so for me, I think what I've learned actually, and this I've learned especially in the last year, and we just put a press release out about this, and we're focused on it. And you'll see some exciting things announced from us next year. But I think what I've learned is that your body needs to recover, and recovery is just as important to the fitness journey that you're on as much as the fitness journey and the fitness workouts itself. What do I mean by that? I mean, pushing yourself 4, 5, 6 days a week in a high intensity workout that's designed to burn and give you more points or whatever it is not a good long-term solution for someone who wants to lead a healthy and active lifestyle, and somebody who wants to maintain consistency with that, because you end up burning out both physically and mentally when you do that. But somebody who comes in together with maybe 1 or 2 high intensity workouts a week and 1 or 2 low intensity type workouts a week, and mixes some recovery elements into that, whether it's percussive therapy or compression or massage or cold therapy, whatever it may be, that's what really will give you an optimal fitness and wellness routine and journey. And for me, I've learned that, and I've changed up my workouts. I used to work out way too high intensity too often. And now I do maybe a couple of those a week. I mix in some strength training. I do some light jogs. My wife dragged me into yoga a few years ago, and I'm not very good at it, and nor am I flexible, but I enjoy it because it really helps me recover. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing I've learned is it's not all about push, push, push. You've got to balance it if you want to maintain that fitness journey and keep consistent for the long term.
Great advice. And when it's coming from the CEO of Gold's Gym, it should be noted. So I hope everyone's paying attention and taking notes. How important is mental health to you as a leader?
Certainly very important. And I'm as an entrepreneur, I'm watching what's going on out there. And I think you're seeing a lot of new startups and a lot of new companies out there who are focusing on mental health. And I think that is a really big part of both the recovery piece, mental health, as well as just your overall journey, especially as it comes as a leader, fitness journey, your leadership journey. And so for me, I think it's super important. And it's something I actually have noted to myself. I do not pay very good attention to it, and I need to do a better job of that. I've had many people tell me to try some of the top meditation apps and just get yourself centered and get yourself back in a good place every morning. And I certainly need to try those things, but I think it is important. As leaders, we go through, I don't know about you, but I go through a myriad of 20 different emotions on a daily basis, from super excited about something to super stressed to super concerned to angry to all within like a 10, 11 hour period. And so having your mental health in check and being able to manage that as a leader is certainly important.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask one final question, and it's going to be a pretty open-ended one. What advice do you have, and you can take this in any direction you want, what advice do you have for listeners on how they can get to the next level professionally, whether they're entrepreneurs, whether they're students, whether they're executives, whether they're fellow CEOs? What are some things that you think are universally applicable that anyone out there can do to really take their game to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Open-ended, a lot of places to take it. I think for me, I think the biggest thing is don't be afraid to put yourself out there. And there's this kind of, there's this poem that's an anonymous actually that I've had sitting on my desk since I was probably 22, 23. It's on my home office, and it's called Only a Person Who Risks Is Free. And I'm not going to read the whole poem to you because I don't know it by heart, but it ends with, you know, a variety of things about people. It talks about people who risk nothing, do nothing. And if you can't risk a little bit and you can't deal with a little bit of sorrow and suffering, then you can't learn and change. And it ends with only a person who risks is free. And I think for to be free to grow in your leadership position, to be free to grow in your company, and don't be afraid to put yourself out there. Obviously, don't risk it all without calculating and being smart about it, but put yourself out there. The people who aren't leaders aren't there because they're not good people. Maybe they just don't want to put themselves out there. The people who get in leadership roles, in my opinion, are the ones who are not afraid to put themselves out there, take a bit of a risk, calculate it at times, sometimes a little more than they would want, and show what they can do, because that's usually when people get noticed. That's usually when other leaders see them and they see the qualities and the tendencies and that ability. And then sometimes the risk will pay off, sometimes it won't, and then you'll learn from it. And the next time you make an attempt to put yourself out there and put a little risk on the table to advance in your career or in your business, it'll pay off for you. So I think for me, that's the most important thing is don't be afraid to put it out there, take a little risk from time to time, because that's how people get ahead.
Adam, thank you for your advice. Thank you for joining us. Very much appreciated.
No, thank you for having me. It was great talk.
Thank you for listening to 30 Minute Mentors. If you enjoyed the podcast, spread the word and feel free to tag Adam at Adam Mendler. You can also head to adammendler.com for more episodes and to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode with another one of our 30 Minute Mentors.